You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council and also by New Futures.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1-9-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for joining us for the program. This hour of the show is presented by the Prescription Center as well as New England College. And this segment of the program brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heat, and air conditioning needs. I encourage you to experience the Paradigm Ship by checking out ParadigmPH.com. New Hampshire Primary Interviews on the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. More information, check out rathlaw.com. And interviews on the campaign trail presented by New Futures. Advocate is a verb. For information, check out new-futures.org.
Joined by Washington Governor Jay Inslee as he campaigns here in Concord. And I want to get your assessment of the race at this point in time. If you look at the numbers and how the candidates stack up, it looks like Joe Biden is in good positioning right now as a centrist candidate. There's a lot of candidates who are vying for, you know, the progressive mantle. Do you or do you feel other candidates need to move more towards the center and start talking about your records in regards to ways that may appeal to independent voters?
Well, look, I think that what I'm proposing has an appeal to all voters. I'm here today to help New Hampshire adopt a family medical leave policy. We've got one of the best ones in the United States. The things I'm talking about, increased minimum wage, teacher pay increases, gender pay equity, the best voting rights in the country, these are things that appeal to all voters in my view, and I'm sticking to what I believe, which is number one, we have to make defeating the climate crisis the number one job of the United States. And if I'm given this high honor, it's going to be my first, foremost, and paramount duty to do that. I'm just sticking to that. We're starting to get more attention about this issue. And if you look what's going on across the United States, from our heat waves and our floods and our fires, there's a good reason to believe that. But I'm also marrying it with the accomplishment that I've had in Washington State, which frankly is unmatched around the candidates. There's only one candidate who is the governor of the best economy in the United States, who has the highest minimum wage, who has the first public option in American history, who's got a 100% clean energy bill and the best gender pay equity and the highest teacher pay increase. So this is a record I'm running on, and I'm happy to stick with it.
You're pushing for one of the Democratic debates to be focused strictly on climate change. There will be 12 debates, at least that's what appears to be the case right now. What if the DNC says, we're not going to do that, we're just going to stick to the format that we have? Would you operate, and do you feel that other candidates should operate outside of the framework of the DNC to speak directly to voters, and would you consider that as an option?
Well, I think we should, before we consider that option, we ought to be continuing to push for democracy here, and that is going on. Today there's thousands of petitions being delivered to the DNC from the grassroots. There's 9 party chairs that are going to bring a resolution to reverse this decision at the next executive board. There's 50 members of the DNC and thousands of people who want to see this debate. And the reason is they understand that this is a unique issue because it combines all the issues, and we can't solve anything else if we don't have a place to live on this planet. And I heard the Secretary of State the other day saying, well, not to worry here. We'll just reorganize society and we'll just move. People can just move. Well, you know, you can't move your farm when it's under 8 feet of water. You can't move in Paradise, California, where your home has been burned to the ground. And that was infuriating to me. So Democrats across America want to see their candidates be called to account to come up with a plan to solve this problem. And I think this is an issue that is still alive in our party. Now, what happens if they don't change their position? I'll be talking to the other candidates. There are 14 candidates now who've asked for a debate in one form or another, one of whom is the vice president, former vice president. Yeah. When you have a former vice president saying we need a debate, I would hope the party would listen to that. Now, whether that's inside or outside the DNC remains to be seen, but we've got to have a full-scale debate and not just some sort of flim-flam forum. People got to be able to share their ideas, share their criticisms, and share their dreams, and I'm happy to stack mine up against anyone.
Talking about the DNC and the debate process, you've made the grade. You're going to be on the stage in the first two rounds of debates, but then the DNC ups the ante. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you think. Is it their job to winnow the field of candidates before voters in the primary states and the caucus states even get to vote?
Look, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe that's an unanswerable question. I'm going to do everything I can to get 130,000. We've had a good surge lately because we have more people responding to my clean energy message They're seeing that my clean energy bill, my climate crisis effort, has been called the gold standard by a lot of people who know this issue. They've understood that I've decided to make it the number one priority, and people are responding to that. So I'm working to get to 130,000, and I hope we get there.
But doesn't that undermine the process, particularly in light of Iowa and New Hampshire's role in that, that in the Democratic process? And there was obviously a lot of pushback about the way that this went the last time around, both on the Republican side and also on the Democratic side, where these decisions were not made by voters, but instead made by powerful party bosses.
Yes, one can make that argument, but I've got to do everything I can to get a debate on the climate crisis. That's what I believe the moral obligation is for the nation, and that is what I intend to do. And so I'm not using a lot of energy arguing about that other issue. I know others may, but I'm committed to getting a debate on the climate crisis. That's what the nation needs.
You brought up teacher pay, and I think that this is a significant issue that hasn't really been talked about enough on the campaign trail, not just teachers, but other important aspects of our society, whether it's social workers, nurses. We have workforce shortages in those areas, and more is being asked of teachers. In your view, what does a teacher pay plan have to look like? And from a federal level, what would you push forth?
We have to make sure that we have quality teachers, and that means not allowing them all to be lured to go to work at Amazon or Microsoft. And we just cannot afford to lose quality, smart, good communicators, high-motivated teachers because they can't afford to be in the classroom. That's fundamentally the go-to issue. So I'm proud that I fought for, and it was hard work, to make sure we got the biggest educator pay increase in the United States. And I say educator because everyone in the school has a role in education. It's the bus driver, it's the cooks, it's the engineers. We got a raise for everyone. And the federal government ought to find a way to pitch in an adequate degree, in a targeted way. There's ways to do that. There's multiple ways to do that. And I'm for finding things that work. But this is necessary for the education of our children.
Foreign policy has not been discussed a lot so far, and I'm sure that will change during the course of the debates, but the president just returned from overseas, and there were a number of stumbles, obviously, as he was over there. And there's a lot of concern across the world in regards to what America is at this point in time, and if America is represented by our president, or if there is a large undercurrent that is really, truly where America is. In your view, what needs to change in regards to our foreign policy, and how would you implement that change?
Number one, we have to have a president who understands America is stronger when it is in alliances rather than having a president to stick his finger in everybody's eye because he's an insecure fellow who doesn't know what he's doing. So number one, to restore our alliances around the world in multiple alliances, including in the climate crisis. Second, we've got to have a president who realizes that the action in Iraq was an example of leadership who is willing to distort intelligence and have an overambitious way to try to restructure another country. I voted against the Iraq war, and I think that was a template of decision-making. Third, we need to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. That is we should not be in a nation-building capacity at this point. Fourth, we've got to have a new resolution regarding the use of force by the president. It's been totally out of control. Congress needs to refresh that to bring an adequate approach to that. Fifth, we need to embrace an international foreign policy that is dedicated to defeating the climate crisis. And that means to elevate the climate crisis in all of our foreign policy tools. One of the things we have to do is to re-engage China so that they don't build coal-fired plants all around the world. They're sort of restricting their coal domestically, but they're financing coal-fired plants to be built around the world, which would sort of doom us. So that is one of our should be one of our foreign policy priorities.
In conclusion, the president, in my view, has appropriately addressed the issue of trade in addressing it, but not necessarily in terms of his solutions, if you will, for the various problems, particularly in regards to China, where the average American family is going to see $800 come out of their pockets as a result of those tariffs, and we saw the debacle with Mexico as well. What is smart trade policy in your view, and how do you go about implementing that policy?
Number one, recognize that there are things we need to do to improve trading relationships, including with China. But you don't reduce your effectiveness by destroying your alliances. We should have an international alliance to engage China, to put pressure on it, to improve our intellectual protection. But in fact, Trump has weakened us by weakening our ability to have those alliances to make them effective. Second, we've got to do things to protect our environmental and labor laws in our trade agreements. They have not been adequate to date. They need to improve. Third, we have to embrace the climate crisis in our trade policy, meaning we need a trade adjustment on the border to protect our workers from undue competition if countries are not doing their appropriate amount to solve the climate crisis. So there's three things we need to do, but the first is to remove a president who couldn't run a two-car funeral. He has no plan, no strategic thought. He doesn't listen to any of the people. It's just scattershot, press release, tweet, and that is not a recipe for success.
Governor Inslee, as always, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Appreciate it.
This is New Hampshire Now on KXL. New Hampshire Primary Interviews presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli, and interviews on the campaign trail brought to you by New Futures. This hour of the program presented by the Prescription Center as well as New England College, and that segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also by New Futures.